Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's going to be a good night. It's going to be a real good night. You know how I know that? Not just because it's the last show of the work week. No, not just because we're kicking off a football weekend. Not just because we already had a good battle on Thursday Night Football. Nope, it's going to be a real good night because I have brand new headphones and they're trimmed with bright pink. I know I'm a girl, a girly girl, actually, though people don't believe me if all they know about me is my radio show. Yes, even my headphones have got tinges of pink, as does my chapstick, actually. It's also bright pink. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's been one heck of an evening for me. Double duty, my first college basketball game on the sidelines this season. And so I already did TV earlier this evening. It's way outside my comfort zone. In fact, I get uber nervous when that stupid camera is pointing at me. But the good thing about basketball is that I'm only on camera three times. The rest of the time, I just get to talk about hoops. And so it's kind of fun to start my season of play-by-play. I did put a picture up on Facebook. I did not forget about you peeps this time. So if you care, I was wearing first game fuchsia. I do love fuchsia. What did I tell you about the pink? Anyway, it's up on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Lots of adrenaline getting me through those moments when I felt like yawning. And it is on Twitter as well. You just have to scroll down a little bit to before the game. That's A-Law Radio. If you care, many of you support my play-by-play dreams, and that's very kind of you, so I want to share the journey with you. Otherwise, we don't have a whole lot of hoops to talk about on this show. We have Kemba Walker's return to Charlotte against his former team, the only team he'd known since he got into the NBA, now with the Boston Celtics. So we'll let you hear from him a little bit later on. Otherwise, it is football, football, football. Ooh, and a little sliver of hockey with a special nerd alert and one historical moment from the ice. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. They understand it's not just a mortgage, it's your mortgage, and that's the difference. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. I cannot wait to talk football with you. Even those callers who, let's see, fall asleep on the phone, they're close talkers, or they breathe heavily on the phone, or they don't really have a point. I mean, I'm in such a good mood that it doesn't matter, actually. Well, I mean, it does matter. As long as you're talking football, bring it, okay? 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. We'll, of course, talk about the games, the featured games of Week 10 in the NFL. I don't know, though, if any game on the Sunday slate will top the anticipation, great anticipation, for the NFC West battle that we get on Monday night. So we will preview that game. Now, if you prefer, say, the Browns and the Bills, cool. If you prefer, say, the Falcons at the Saints, also cool. Maybe you're one of those people, you might be alone on your island, that prefers the Dolphins at the Colts. That's fine, too. But we'll do our regular Thursday night into Friday poll. As we get toward the weekend, the game that you're most looking forward to, I almost feel like it's unfair not to put LSU Alabama in there. And that's not the only game that features ranked teams. Of course, Penn State will have a challenge on the road at Minnesota. And so it's a big weekend in college football as well. And we're going to talk college football specifically coming up in 30 minutes here on After Hours. CBS Sports Radio will welcome our national college football insider and kind of pick apart the implications of the rankings from earlier in the week. But also, is it really the game of the century? If someone can convince me that LSU Alabama is the game of the century, fine, I will change my tune. But for now, I'm not buying your hyperbole, okay? But certainly it's a really big game. I am looking forward to it. I've got my schedule cleared. You want to know what nerdy thing I did before we talk about Thursday Night Football? I am a nerd, but I'm also an anal retentive organized nerd. And the only way that I will remember everything that I need to do on a daily basis is to keep a regular list. So I keep a weekly list on my phone. And every week I line up all the different things that have to be done Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And it gives me great joy to erase, you don't check it off or cross it off, but on your phone you erase it, and to have it disappear, poof. I am not going to miss LSU Alabama to the point where I even put it on my to-do list. I'm such an idiot. I didn't put anything else on my to-do list that had to do with sports, but I put LSU. Thank you, Kawhi. At least someone out there is laughing. It's fine to laugh at me. That's how big this game is. But game of the century, I don't know. It makes my to-do list. I don't know about the game of the century. Anyway, no more embarrassing stories about me. And no, you cannot see my to-do list either. Put all kinds of good stuff in there, like boring, mundane, household stuff, but also the fun stuff as well, like Thursday Night Football. No, sorry, Raiders and Chargers, you did not make my to-do list. However, I did enjoy the game that ended just a few hours ago. We had talked about the Oakland Raiders. In fact, Dave had talked about them being the surprise of the week for him. And a lot of people, I think, changing their tunes on John Gruden, which is, it's good, but it's also a little bit redonkulous that people had to change their tunes on John Gruden, considering what he's done in his past as a coach. I much prefer Gruden as a coach over Gruden as a broadcaster. But I get it. There's an entire generation of football fans that don't remember what John Gruden did when he was a coach previously. Still, that first year back in Oakland, the trades that he made, clearing out a lot of the calorie space. not so much the calories, though I guess the stress on the sideline could burn the calories. The salary cap space and stockpiling draft picks, and there were a lot of people that questioned whether or not he had a plan. You got to have a plan, Stan. Did he have a plan? Well, he said he did. Did he lose the locker room? There's a lot of speculation about that. I think it's safe to say we now know Gruden had a plan. He had a blueprint that he laid out. A player's more on a need-to-know basis. But definitely, he did not lose the locker room. And definitely, you are starting to see the results now. There are two areas of this game that I think are really critical and that I wanted to highlight. Number one is certainly the defense. This was a knockdown, drag it out type of a game between two teams that know each other pretty well. A divisional game, a short work week. It wasn't always going to be aesthetically pleasing. But the defense for the Raiders is now stepping up and playing some of its best football of the season. From turnovers to sacks to quarterback hits to big stops when they had to have them, the Raiders defense, minus Khalil Mack, would it be better with him? Sure. But the guys that are there are bought in, and not only are they carrying their weight, but they're becoming a bit of a force to be reckoned with on their own.
Quisenberry is his center. And he is going to throw on this down. Fires high. Intercepted again. Picked off. Return to the 40. Down the sideline. 20-yard line. Here comes Eric Harris going in all the way. Touchdown, Raiders. Allen moves in motion over to the left side of the formation. Rivers is up underneath center. Now he brings him back in motion. He wants to throw. Drops back. And he's going to be sacked. He is going to be sacked. The Raider defense led by Clee Ferrell. That's his third of the night.
Brent Musburger, I still have to get used to him as the voice of the Oakland Raiders. I know it's been a couple years and I'm still adjusting. But Eric Harris with a pair of interceptions in the first quarter. In fact, the first two drives off Phillip Rivers. And he could have had at least one more, maybe two more, actually. So the penalties for the Raiders, really the only major glaring weakness. But the defense was more than able to cover up the issues and the pre-snap penalties and the holdings and the lack of discipline. There definitely was that. But for Oakland Raiders defense on Thursday Night Football, you had smash mouth, hard-hitting, fierce, physical, we protect this house football. And it was fun to watch. As a girl who loves defense, I enjoyed it. There was definitely running room for Melvin Gordon. And the 1-2 punch that Anthony Lynn has talked about with Gordon and Austin Eckler, we're seeing that. And we did see it. We saw it with their ball control. At times, the Chargers wouldn't allow the Raiders to have the ball. And if not for their turnovers, three interceptions and a couple of other balls that should have been intercepted, maybe the outcome is different. It's only a 2-point game. However, the Raiders defense was able to pilfer the football from one Phillip Rivers. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. Yeah, for the Chargers, you can see now them getting into more of a groove offensively, minus the turnovers, minus the Phillip Rivers mistakes. I mean, the Oakland defense was really prepared. But early in the second quarter, there's a 16-play drive that consumes more than 8 minutes. And then the touchdown drive late in the fourth quarter was a dozen plays, more than 8 minutes. It really didn't leave the Raiders a whole lot of time to work. And that was the go-ahead drive for the Chargers. So the offense is in a good groove. It's simplistic, but the turnovers were the killers. They were able to run the ball. They were able to move the ball. When they had to, though, they weren't able to stop the ball.
The Chargers show a 9-man front against this set. The hand, big hole, first down, end zone, touchdown, Jacobs, touchdown, Raiders. Would you believe it? Off the bench. The offensive line blows the hole open against that 9-man box, and Jacobs takes it home. Roll Tide, baby.
The rookie out of Alabama, Josh Jacobs, probably really excited about LSU-Bama this weekend as well. So Brent Musburger again on the Raiders radio network with 1:02 remaining in the game. Josh Jacobs just right up the gut. I mean, the offensive line for the Raiders able to clear, almost like the Red Sea parting, able to clear a massive space, and he just went right up the gut. We know the Chargers have had trouble stopping the run this season at times, though definitely not against the Packers. Football is weird. But to see the way that the Raiders bared down and got that huge hole when they needed it, it's the second consecutive week in which the Raiders have scored the go-ahead touchdown late in the fourth quarter, and then had to protect that lead with the defense. It gives you confidence, not just a divisional win, not just a 2-point win after the missed extra point. Oy, talk about adventures in kicking. But the fact that it's still hanging in the balance and it requires both sides of the football to get this win. And don't look now, but the Raiders are 5-4. They are above 500, just behind the Chiefs in the AFC West.
That was an old school AFC West bloodbath, basically. Just two defenses playing out of their mind. And yeah, we just found a way to win, you know. And that says so much about our team. See, that we've had so many weeks now where we've been efficient. We're moving the chains, third down, all these kind of things. And then we ran into, this team, and for whatever reason tonight, you know, it was just, you know, some nights are just tougher than others, right? You know what I'm saying? And this was one of those nights.
I do know what you're saying, because there are nights that are definitely tougher than others. Derek Carr, 21 of 31, 218 yards. He had the touchdown. but he had no turnovers. And there is your major glaring difference. Now, of course, when they go back and watch tape, one thing that's going to stick out and probably stick in the craw of John Gruden, the penalties. A dozen of them for 97 yards. So even on that last attempt by the Chargers, they thought they had a fourth down stop and had to go through all four downs again because they committed a holding penalty to hand the Chargers a first down. So it's not perfect. But when you can win without it being perfect, you feel pretty good about what you're doing on the field, but also about the progress that you're making. And so again, the Raiders sit at 5-4, just a game back of the Chiefs, who are at 6-3, and of course, will play this weekend. We're waiting to hear about Patrick Mahomes. We're already into week 10 in the NFL. Excited to talk about it with you. Want to hear from John Gruden. He loves the Coliseum. Man, Gruden is going to miss that old place when they move to Las Vegas. And Anthony Lynn still hoping to get some post-game reaction from Phillip Rivers as well, but those interceptions killer, both early and late. Thanks so much for joining us on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Rivers has the snap. He's back to pass. Rivers looks, pumps, goes deep down the right side into double coverage. Intercepted by Carl Joseph. Joseph picks it off, and the Raiders will win.
We can't turn the ball over. We know that. You know, we turned it over. They didn't. So if you're asking me about today's game, I mean, that's the first thing I look at is winning and losing, turning the ball over and not taking it away. That's number one.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I would think it would be number one, it would be number two, it would be number three. When you're on the road, you already are behind the eight ball. I don't care if you are the favorite team or not, but when it's a good home field advantage, and in the case of the fans at the Coliseum, 53,000 strong, dressed up like it's still Halloween, of course, and all jawing and yelling and insulting and jeering right in your face, well, as close as they can get. You can't afford to turn the ball over, especially not on the first two possessions of the game, which just revs them up even more. Now, you never want to turn the ball over at home either, but on the road, it's like compounding the issue, asking for trouble, as if it's not hard enough to win. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Ryan Radke with the call on the Westwood One radio network. He had Rod Woodson along with him, the Hall of Famer. And it was kind of fun. I happened to be listening after the game because I was getting ready for work. And as they get their post-game interview with Eric Harris, who, of course, had two interceptions, nearly had three or four, they introduce themselves. So Harris is down on the field, and Radke and Woodson are up in the booth, and they introduce themselves. Ryan says, hi, it's Ryan Radke, Westwood One. He asks this question of Eric Harris. And then Rod Woodson says, hey, it's Rod Woodson. And the reaction from Eric Harris was fantastic. Oh, hey, man. Really kind of cool, right? Because Woodson, of course, was a defensive back. I mean, we know his resume, but incredible player. And here's Eric Harris, who is a safety and, of course, knows all about Rod Woodson. So that was kind of fun. Oh, hey, man. So Eric ends up with, as I say, two of the three interceptions. Then the one at the end of the game that finally sealed it off for the Oakland Raiders. And just the celebration for the defense I thought was really cool because this is exactly what they need to complement their offense.
It was a pretty exciting, special moment for this team, special moment for my teammates, you know, and credit to them for putting me in a position and just trusting those guys.
It's funny because you look at the Oakland Raiders on defense and a lot of, maybe until this point, a lot of what people will see is no Khalil Mack, right? But the guys that they have put out there on the field, they have the athleticism. They certainly have the ability to put pressure on the passer. There were, as we say, five sacks. Now, it's matchup to matchup. They need to be able to get this push no matter what they're doing. But very often, when they were getting to Phillip Rivers, they weren't blitzing. They were just bringing their front four. And so just tough, physical, smash-mouth football, and enough that it rattled Phillip Rivers' cage. And so it was good to see them play like that the last 2 weeks. Now, can they keep it going? They're right in the mix in the AFC for either the West title or a wild card. My favorite term now I've decided is describing the AFC as a mosh pit, which means so much is on the table as we head into the second half. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. It's brought to you toll-free by Geico with a quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on your car insurance. So I mentioned the defense, and that's certainly important, but I also felt like the play of Derek Carr needs to be highlighted. Not so much because of what he did in this particular game, but because he looks comfortable. He looks fluid. And maybe it took that first year plus to really get acclimated, not just to John Gruden, but also to the system. It's a new voice. It's different leadership. And certainly the losing takes its toll. So when you go through a season in which you're 4-12, the Raiders already have more wins than they did a year ago, that losing grates on you and it wears on you. And there was so much transition on the roster. But if you watch this game or you've watched the Raiders lately, doesn't Derek Carr look like he's extremely comfortable? He's found a good rhythm, that he and Gruden have a good rapport now. And Gruden has even said, Carr is an extension of me, the head coach, on the field.
He showed great poise in the two-minute drill especially and used a lot of different receivers. I got to give Jalen Richard a lot of credit. He gives our offense a different dynamic, and you saw Jacobs come in for the big touchdown. So it's a good effort by a lot of guys.
So John Gruden, Derek Carr, the Oakland defense, Josh Jacobs looking ahead to LSU-Bama. Now he can completely take the weekend and enjoy what is maybe or maybe not the game of the century. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. What's the game you're most looking forward to this weekend? We'll get the poll up, but you can find us on our social media. And if it's LSU-Bama, fantastic. We're going to dive into college football in light of the first rankings and this massive game in Tuscaloosa.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I can't wait myself. Thank you for agreeing with me. We're going to talk to our college football insider when he joins us next.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Second down and a yard at the 7. Burrow takes the snap. Under pressure, rolls to his right. Fires a bullet. Inside the end zone. Give me the sign. Give me the sign. Touchdown, Tigers. Justin Jefferson just inside the end zone. Right pylon. And the Tigers regain the lead.
Here's a 3rd and 3 now. Henches comes in motion. Left of the formation. Snap to Tua. He'll stretch the field. Comes left. He'll dive towards the goal line. Touchdown, Alabama. Tua Tagovailoa.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Is it the game of the century? I guess we'll find out. Or maybe you're okay with it being billed that way, just a few years after the other game of the century between LSU and Alabama. One thing's for sure, there's a lot of anticipation for this matchup between number 2 and number 3. Chris Blair on the LSU radio network, Eli Gold, the longtime voice of Alabama from Learfield. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks so much for joining us. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. We're ready to talk football with you, and that includes college football and a big time weekend ahead of us. So we're pleased to welcome Brian Fisher, who's a national insider for College Football Talk. Brian, before we look at LSU-Alabama, what's your reaction to the initial college football playoff rankings that came out this week?
About right, you know, about kind of what we expected in terms of everything that was kind of going into. You knew that obviously with the committee structure and what we've seen in the past, that they were going to be a little bit different from what we saw in the AP and the coaches poll. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think it was pretty much as expected. I think, you know, some teams like Minnesota and Baylor probably came in a little bit lower than they expected, given that their records that they've made up till this point. But, you know, the committee's task is not to really pay attention to necessarily what your wins and losses, but who you've beat, you know, how you've played this season and what you've done. And I think they've done that. And, you know, this is still an exercise and something that we just go through every week. And there's only one that matters. And I think that's the important thing to keep in mind is that there's only that last one at the end of the year that really, really does matter for these rankings. And the rest is kind of just window dressing.
It's just a big tease is what it is.
It absolutely is, and it really is, especially because we obsess over these rankings so much, you know, during the regular season, especially the last month when kind of everything is coming down to the wire with these conference races and all that. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the committee is going to hem and haw and try to give excuses of why teams are so low or really kind of pump up others. At the end of the day, they're just voting on these teams in the order that they see fit. And so until it really comes down to crunch time when you got to really explain 4 versus 5 and 7 versus 8 and all that down the road, it really doesn't matter all that that much. But it is fun to talk about, that's for sure.
So, Brian, I'm not a huge fan of the hyperbole of game of the century, especially when we already had one a few years ago. However, LSU, Alabama, number 2 at number 3. It's got this game of the century 2.0 hype machine moving with it. If I were to ask you, how would you make a case for Saturday's action to be a game of the century? What would you tell me?
I would say it's absolutely not the game of the century. I would be very upfront with you in saying that this doesn't even feel like the one, I think it was 2011, a couple of years ago when they were 1 versus 2 coming into this. That one felt like there were higher stakes. I think with this one, especially if LSU loses, I think there's still a way for them to get back into that national title chase, given what their resume is right now. So I think at the end of the day, a loss for either side isn't quite as the death knell that it was a couple of years ago in the BCS era. So I think that's one thing that's kind of contributed. I think the other thing is everybody expects this to kind of be some high scoring and all the offenses and two Heisman Trophy candidates possibly. But there's just a lot of NFL talent. It's just going to be a good game, I think, overall. And I think coming into this, this might not have kind of the hype and expectations of past meetings, but it's LSU, it's Alabama. We know it's going to be a very good game, even if it's not quite that huge billing that we've seen for these 1 versus 2 matchups before.
In your opinion, how far ahead or how far above, depending on the terminology, is Ohio State than an LSU and an Alabama at this point in the season in terms of the play on the field?
I don't think it's much, but I think the thing about Ohio State this year is so far we haven't really seen many flaws. You know, you could point to Alabama's run defense, you know, especially with all those freshmen in their front seven. You could point to LSU's defense earlier in the year, giving up some big plays at times. You know, Ohio State really hasn't done that. They've dominated from start to finish of their games. They've played good opponents like Wisconsin. They've taken care of business. Really, the only team that's had any decent amount of success is Florida Atlantic in the first game of the year in the second half. So I think, you know, you look at just the domination of Ohio State. They can run the ball effectively with J.K. Dobbins. They obviously got Chase Young coming off the edge on defense. You know, they tick a lot of boxes off. And I think that's why, you know, they're the number one team in a lot of people's minds. And certainly they're still going to have to play Penn State down the road. They've still got that Michigan game looming. You know, they're going to get tested the rest of this month. But as it stands right now, I think there's still while there's not much of a gap between them and the other teams, I think they're the clear number one at this point.
Brian Fisher covers college football, the national scene for College Football Talk. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. If there was a major debate about the rankings, it was Penn State 4 and Clemson 5, and those are your 5 undefeated teams. The Tigers, of course, hurt by the ACC schedule. But when you look at their play on the field, how would you compare them to how they finished up last season as the national champs, Brian?
You know, I think they're kind of following the same kind of script. You know, you have that kind of close, threatening win, you know, earlier in the season. You know, the offense is continuing to kind of build up some steam. Yeah, they had some success early on those first couple of games, and then after UNC, they kind of took a little bit of a half step back. But I think they're all getting on the same page, and this is just what Clemson does. You know, especially on the offensive side of the ball. You know, it takes a little bit time for everybody to kind of get on the same page, figure out what they really want to do well, add in those wrinkles throughout the regular season to where you can rely on them come playoff time. And I think, you know, defensively, we knew that Brent Venables, as great as he is, he still had to replace a lot of talent,
yes,
especially in that front four. You know, and it's taken those guys a little bit of time to kind of get used to the game action and going from backup to starter. So I wouldn't be, if I'm Dabo Swinney, you're certainly using that number five ranking as a little bit of a motivation factor, getting how they've been blowing out opponents lately. But that coaching staff, they know how to get to the national title game. They know how to win it. They're building towards something much bigger than the rankings this week, and certainly building for a lot bigger than any of these regular season games that they have left.
Inside the ACC, same conference, Florida State ends up making a coaching change or firing their coach. And the names that we're hearing associated with this job potentially are kind of strange. I heard Deion Sanders earlier on Thursday when I think it was earlier in the week when it was Bob Stoops, the name that was being floated around. What is Florida State looking for, Brian?
I think more than anything that they need some stability, you know, certainly some leadership, some on the field, you know, acumen. I think is the biggest thing I think they're looking for is can you make this program better between the lines on Saturdays and then obviously everything that goes to leading up. I think Willie Taggart, if he had given enough time, he might have gotten back on that track, but there's just too many mistakes, that he had on, you know, under him. I know they're going to go big game hunting, that they want to bring in somebody big, you know, that they can kind of trot out in front of that fan base to appease them. But the bottom line is they got to get a coach that's got to get his hands dirty, that's got to understand that you know, there's going to be some turnover with the roster, that which is already not in great shape. You've got APR issues that, you know, I think talking with a lot of coaches, it's not quite as an attractive job as some would like it to be, as they're talking about the search. But at the end of the day, it's still a team that in a program that won a national title, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, and can get back there pretty easily. Now, do you have to deal with the juggernaut in the ACC that is Clemson? Absolutely. But you can get back to number two in that conference extremely quickly with the way there is talent in that state. And I think, you know, when you're talking about probably paying $4 or $5 million a year with a huge buyout for the next coach, it's going to be an attractive position. They're going to find somebody good. And I think at the end of the day, Florida State will be just fine, even though they've gone through this very turbulent period the last 4 or 5 years.
Brian Fisher of College Football Talk with us here after hours. CBS Sports Radio getting set for a huge weekend, not just LSU-Alabama, but now that we've got the first rankings, we'll watch how the committee deals with wins and losses. Could this be a year in which we have multiple major conferences left out because of the Pac-12? Well, they've got a couple of teams that are back there below the top six, but even the Big 12 doesn't have a major presence.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk about already some of those conferences that had been left out in the last couple of years, certainly with you know, Notre Dame crashing the party last year, that obviously forces somebody out. And we could have that scenario again this year. I mean, there's still a scenario where, you know, two Big Ten teams get in, two SEC teams, obviously, with LSU and Alabama. You know, I think at the end of the day, the committee is still going to put in what they determine to be the four best teams, regardless of conference affiliation. I think that's why, you know, you've seen Jim Delaney the last couple of years kind of beat the drum for the fact that they need to consider conference champions a little bit more closely than they have been. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a system designed for teams to succeed on the field and be rewarded for that. And I would imagine that if the Pac-12 comes close and they're number five again this year, maybe there's a chance that Larry Scott says, all right, you know, instead of being kind of wishy-washy on playoff expansion, maybe we actually go forward with it, maybe we start pushing it, and maybe he has you know, somebody, maybe it's Bob Bowlesby out of the Big 12, maybe it's somebody in the Big 10. But I do think that whether it's the conference commissioner level, whether it's, you know, fans, whether it's coaches, they see that expansion is coming at some point. And until then, everybody's just going to hem and haw until eventually something ends up happening.
Brian, I know it's early and we still have a bunch of regular season games to go, but who is your Heisman Trophy front runner at this point?
Oh, that's so difficult to put into words. But I think at this point, I'm going with Chase Young just because of how dominant he's been. You know, the award is truly who is the most outstanding player in college football. To me, he's lived up to that billing with the way he affects games, even if he's not getting, you know, sacks and tackles for loss, which those numbers are off the charts for sure. But even if he's not doing that, he's commanding double teams. He's affecting, you know, the pace of play. He's putting pressure on the quarterback to rush throws. So to me, he's kind of the guy right now, and certainly he has opportunities even down the stretch to get even more notoriety with those big-time games coming up. But he's kind of the number one. I think we'll have a bit of an elimination battle between Joe Burrow and Tua Tagovailoa. Should he be healthy on Saturday? I think that's something to keep in mind. And I still think Jalen Hurts is sitting pretty there because, he suffered that loss against Kansas State, but his numbers are phenomenal. I think he's got the great storyline of leaving Alabama, going to Oklahoma, and turning himself into, you know, really covering up a lot of those flaws that people thought he had, turning them into huge strengths under Lincoln Riley. And when you look at the numbers, he's on pace to be the most efficient quarterback in NCAA history as a transfer. And so I think, you know, a lot of that is the success of the OU offense, but a lot of it is how special Jalen Hurts is. And if he has a big stretch run, gets Oklahoma back in the playoff, I think he's going to be a name that consistently comes up in the mix as well.
But I love that you go defense first. Chase Young with 13.5 sacks so far this season for Ohio State, not to mention the five forced fumbles and the fact that he's a wrecking ball in there. All right, you can find Brian on Twitter at Brian with a Y, D, Fisher with a C. He is a National College Football Insider for College Football Talk, and it's really good to catch up with you. Thanks so much.
Absolutely good to be on with you.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.